Monday, day two before Shabbat, Parasha Vayigash, and he approached. Vayigash continued, Genesis 45.
Joseph revealed to his brothers.
Then Joseph couldn't control himself before all those who stood before him, and he cried, "Cause everyone to go out from me." No one else stood with him, while Joseph made himself known to his brothers. He wept aloud. The Egyptians heard, and the house of Pharaoh heard. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Does my father still live?" His brothers couldn't answer him, for they were terrified at his presence. Joseph said to his brothers, "Come near to me, please." They came near. He said, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. Now don't be grieved, nor angry with yourselves, that you sold me here, for Elohim sent me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years the famine has been in the land, and there are yet 5 years, in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. Elohim sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth, and to save you alive by a great deliverance. So now it wasn't you who sent me here, but Elohim, and he has made me a father to Pharaoh, master of all his house, and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry, and go up to my father, and tell him, 'This is what your son Joseph says, Elohim has made me master of all Egypt. Come down to me. Don't wait. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you will be near to me, you, your children, your children's children, your flocks, your herds, and all that you have. There I will nourish you, for there are yet 5 years of famine, lest you come to poverty, you, and your household, and all that you have. Behold, your eyes see, and the eyes of my brother Benjamin, that it is my mouth that speaks to you. You shall tell my father of all my glory in Egypt, and of all that you have seen. You shall hurry and bring my father down here." He fell on his brother Benjamin's neck, and wept, and Benjamin wept on his neck. He kissed all his brothers, and wept on them. After that his brothers talked with him. The report of it was heard in Pharaoh's house, saying, "Joseph's brothers have come." It pleased Pharaoh well, and his servants. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Tell your brothers, do this. Load your animals, and go, travel to the land of Canaan. Take your father and your households, and come to me, and I will give you the good of the land of Egypt, and you will eat the fat of the land. Now you were commanded, do this. Take wagons out of the land of Egypt for your little ones, and for your wives, and bring your father, and come. Also, don't concern yourselves about your belongings, for the good of all of the land of Egypt is yours." The sons of Israel did so. Joseph gave them wagons, according to the commandment of Pharaoh, and gave them provision for the way. He gave each one of them changes of clothing, but to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of clothing. He sent the following to his father: 10 donkeys loaded with the good things of Egypt, and 10 female donkeys loaded with grain and bread and provision for his father by the way. So he sent his brothers away, and they departed. He said to them, "See that you don't quarrel in the way." They went up out of Egypt, and came into the land of Canaan, to Jacob their father. They told him, saying, "Joseph is still alive, and he is ruler over all the land of Egypt." His heart fainted, for he didn't believe them. They told him all the words of Joseph, which he had said to them. When he saw the wagons which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob, their father, revived. Israel said, "It is enough. Joseph my son is still alive. I will go and see him before I die." John 19.
The soldiers mock Yeshua.
So Pilate then took Yeshua, and flogged him. The soldiers twisted thorns into a crown, and put it on his head, and dressed him in a purple garment. They kept saying, "Hail, King of the Jews!" And they kept slapping him. Then Pilate went out again, and said to them, "Behold, I bring him out to you, that you may know that I find no basis for a charge against him."
Pilate's decision.
Yeshua therefore came out, wearing the crown of thorns and the purple garment. Pilate said to them, "Behold, the man." When therefore the chief priests and the officers saw him, they shouted, saying, "Crucify! Crucify!" Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves, and crucify him, for I find no basis for a charge against him." The Judeans answered him, "We have a law, and by our law he ought to die, because he made himself the son of Elohim." When therefore Pilate heard this saying, he was more afraid. He entered into the praetorium again, and said to Yeshua, "Where are you from?" But Yeshua gave him no answer. Pilate therefore said to him, "Aren't you speaking to me? Don't you know that I have power to release you, and have power to crucify you?" Yeshua answered, "You would have no power at all against me, unless it were given to you from above. Therefore he who delivered me to you has greater sin." At this, Pilate was seeking to release him, but the Judeans cried out, saying, "If you release this man, you aren't Caesar's friend. Everyone who makes himself a king speaks against Caesar." When Pilate therefore heard these words, he brought Yeshua out, and sat down in the judgment seat at a place called the Pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. Now it was the preparation day of the Passover, at about the sixth hour. He said to the Judeans, "Behold, your king." They cried out, "Away with him! Away with him! Crucify him!" Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." So then he delivered him to them to be crucified. So they took Yeshua and led him away.
The king on a tree.
He went out, bearing his cross, to the place called the place of a skull, which is called in Hebrew, Golgotha, where they crucified him, and with him two others, on either side one, and Yeshua in the middle. Pilate wrote a title also, and put it on the cross. There was written Yeshua of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. Therefore many of the Judeans read this title, for the place where Yeshua was crucified was near the city, and it was written in Hebrew, in Latin, and in Greek. The chief priests of the Judeans therefore said to Pilate, "Don't write, the King of the Jews," but, he said, "I am King of the Jews." Pilate answered, "What I have written, I have written." Then the soldiers, when they had crucified Yeshua, took his garments and made four parts, to every soldier a part, and also the coat. Now the coat was without seam, woven from the top throughout. Then they said to one another, "Let's not tear it, but cast lots for it to decide whose it will be, that the scripture might be fulfilled, which says, 'They parted my garments among them. For my cloak they cast lots.'" Therefore the soldiers did these things.
"Behold your mother."
But there were standing by the cross of Yeshua his mother, and his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. Therefore when Yeshua saw his mother, and the disciple whom he loved standing there, he said to his mother, "Woman, behold your son." Then he said to the disciple, "Behold, your mother." From that hour, the disciple took her to his own home.
It is finished.
After this, Yeshua, seeing that all things were now finished, that the scripture might be fulfilled, said, "I am thirsty." Now a vessel full of vinegar was set there, so they put a sponge full of the vinegar in hyssop, and held it at his mouth. When Yeshua therefore had received the vinegar, he said, "It is finished." He bowed his head, and gave up his spirit.
Yeshua's side is pierced.
Therefore the Judeans, because it was the preparation day, so that the bodies wouldn't remain on the cross on the Sabbath, for that Sabbath was a special one, asked of Pilate that their legs might be broken, and that they might be taken away. Therefore the soldiers came, and broke the legs of the first, and of the other who was crucified with him, but when they came to Yeshua, and saw that he was already dead, they didn't break his legs. However, one of the soldiers pierced his side with a spear, and immediately blood and water came out. He who has seen has testified, and his testimony is true. He knows that he tells the truth, that you may believe. For these things happened, that the scripture might be fulfilled, "A bone of him will not be broken." Again another scripture says, "They will look on him whom they pierced."
Yeshua buried in Joseph's tomb.
After these things, Joseph of Arimathea, being a disciple of Yeshua, but secretly for fear of the Judeans, asked of Pilate that he might take away Yeshua's body. Pilate gave him permission. He came therefore and took away his body. Nicodemus, who at first came to Yeshua by night, also came bringing a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 100 Roman pounds. So they took Yeshua's body, and bound it in linen cloths with the spices, as the custom of the Judeans is to bury. Now in the place where he was crucified there was a garden. In the garden was a new tomb in which no man had ever yet been laid. Then because of the Judeans' preparation day, for the tomb was near at hand, they laid Yeshua there. End of today's Torah and related scriptures. Praise Yah. HNV version, in the public domain. Hanukkah 7, 7 candles, feast of dedication. Hanukkah 7, number 748-59. On the seventh day Elishama the son of Ammihud, prince of the children of Ephraim gave his offering, one silver platter, the weight of which was 130 shekels, one silver bowl of 70 shekels. After the shekel of the sanctuary, both of them full of fine flour mixed with oil for a meal offering, one golden ladle of 10 shekels, full of incense, one young bull, one ram, one male lamb a year old, for a burnt offering, one male goat for a sin offering, and for the sacrifice of peace offerings, two head of cattle, five rams, five male goats, and five male lambs a year old. This was the offering of Elishama the son of Ammihud. On the eighth day Gamaliel the son of Pedazur, prince of the children of Manasseh gave his offering, one silver platter, the weight of which was 130 shekels, one silver bowl of 70 shekels. After the shekel of the sanctuary, both of them full of fine flour mixed with oil for a meal offering, one golden ladle of 10 shekels, full of incense, one young bull, one ram, one male lamb a year old, for a burnt offering, one male goat for a sin offering, and for the sacrifice of peace offerings, two head of cattle, five rams, five male goats, and five male lambs a year old. This was the offering of Gamaliel the son of Pedazur. 2 Maccabees 9, 1-29 Nebuchadnezzar. The last campaign of Antiochus Epiphanes. Death of Antiochus. About that time Antiochus retreated in disgrace from the region of Persia. He had entered the city called Persepolis and attempted to rob the temple and gain control of the city. Thereupon the people had swift recourse to arms, and Antiochus' men were routed, so that in the end Antiochus was put to flight by the natives and forced to beat a shameful retreat. On his arrival in Ecbatana, he learned what had happened to Nicanor and to Timothy's forces. Overcome with anger, he planned to make the Jews suffer for the injury done by those who had put him to flight. Therefore he ordered his charioteer to drive without stopping until he finished the journey. Yet the condemnation of heaven rode with him, since he said in his arrogance, I will make Jerusalem the common graveyard of the Jews as soon as I arrive there. So the all-seeing Yahweh, the Elohim of Israel, struck him down with an unseen but incurable blow, for scarcely had he uttered those words when he was seized with excruciating pains in his bowels and sharp internal torment. A fit punishment for him who had tortured the bowels of others with many barbarous torments. Far from giving up his insolence, he was all the more filled with arrogance. Breathing fire in his rage against the Jews, he gave orders to drive even faster. As a result, he hurtled from the dashing chariot, and every part of his body was wracked by the violent fall. Thus he had previously, in his superhuman presumption, thought he could command the waves of the sea, and imagined he could weigh the mountain tops in his scales, was now thrown to the ground and had to be carried on a litter, clearly manifesting to all the power of Elohim. The body of this impious man swarmed with worms, and while he was still alive in hideous torments, his flesh rotted off, so that the entire army was sickened by the stench of his corruption. Shortly before, he had thought that he could reach the stars of heaven, and now, no one could endure to transport the man because of this intolerable stench. At last, broken in spirit, he began to give up his excessive arrogance, and to gain some understanding, under the scourge of Elohim, for he was racked with pain unceasingly. When he could no longer bear his own stench, he said, it is right to be subject to Elohim, and not to think one's mortal self divine. Antiochus makes a promise to Elohim. Then this vile man vowed to Yahweh, who would no longer have mercy on him, that he would set free the set-apart holy city, toward which he had been hurrying with the intention of leveling it to the ground and making it a common graveyard. He would put in perfect equality with the Athenians all the Jews, whom he had judged not even worthy of burial but fit only to be thrown out with their children to be eaten by vultures and wild animals. He would adorn with the finest offerings the set-apart holy temple which he had previously despoiled, he would restore all the sacred vessels many times over, and would provide from his own revenues the expenses required for the sacrifices. Besides all this, he would become a Jew himself and visit every inhabited place to proclaim there the power of Elohim. But since Elohim's punishment had justly come upon him, his sufferings were not lessened, so he lost hope for himself and wrote the following letter to the Jews in the form of a supplication. It read thus, Death of Antiochus. Antiochus's letter and death. To my esteemed Jewish citizens, Anshakus, their king and general, sends hearty greetings and best wishes for their health and happiness. If you and your children are well and your affairs are going as you wish, I thank Elohim very much, for my hopes are in heaven. Now that I am ill, I recall with affection the esteem and goodwill you bear me. On returning from the regions of Persia, I fell victim to a troublesome illness, so I thought it necessary to form plans for the general welfare of all. Actually, I do not despair about my health, since I have great hopes of recovering from my illness. Nevertheless, I know that my father, whenever he went on campaigns in the hinterland, would name his successor, so that, if anything unexpected happened or any unwelcome news came, the people throughout the realm would know to whom the government had been entrusted, and so not be disturbed. I am also bearing in mind that the neighboring rulers, especially those in the borders of our kingdom, are on the watch for opportunities and waiting to see what will happen. I have therefore appointed as king my son Anshakus, whom I have often before entrusted and commended to most of you, when I made hurried visits to the outlying provinces. I have written to him the letter copied below. Therefore I beg and entreat each of you to remember the general and individual benefits you have received, and to continue to show goodwill toward me and my son. I am confident that, following my policy, he will treat you with mildness and kindness in his relations with you. So this murderer and blasphemer, after extreme sufferings, such as he had inflicted on others, died a miserable death in the mountains of a foreign land. His foster brother Philip brought the body home, but fearing Anshakus' son, he later withdrew into Egypt, to Ptolemy Philometor. 2 Maccabees 10:1-38 Nabu. Purification of the Temple. When Maccabees and his companions, under Yahweh's leadership, had recovered the temple and the city, they destroyed the altars erected by the Gentiles in the marketplace and the sacred enclosures. After purifying the temple, they made a new altar. Then, with fire struck from flint, they offered sacrifice for the first time in 2 years, burned incense, and lighted lamps. They also set out the show bread. When they had done this, they prostrated themselves and begged Yahweh that they might never again fall into such misfortunes, and that if they should sin at any time, he might chastise them with moderation and not hand them over to blasphemous and barbarous Gentiles. On the anniversary of the day in which the temple had been profaned by the Gentiles, that is, the 25th of the same month Kislev, the purification of the temple took place. The Jews celebrated joyfully for 8 days as in the Feast of Booths, remembering how, a little while before, they had spent the Feast of Booths living like wild animals in caves on the mountains. Carrying rods entwined with leaves, green branches and palms, they sang hymns of grateful praise to him who had brought about the purification of his own place. By public edict and decree they prescribed that the whole Jewish nation should celebrate these days every year. Such was the end of Anshakus, surnamed Epiphanes. Accession of Anshakus Upater. Now we shall relate what happened under Anshakus Upater, the son of that godless man, and shall give a summary of the chief evils caused by the wars. When Upater succeeded to the kingdom, he put a certain Lysias in charge of the government as commander-in-chief of Coelsary and Phoenicia. Ptolemy, surnamed Macron, had taken the lead in treating the Jews fairly because of the previous injustice that had been done them, and he endeavored to have peaceful relations with them. As a result, he was accused before Upater by the king's friends. In fact, on all sides he heard himself called a traitor for having abandoned Cyprus, which Philometor had entrusted to him, and for having gone over to Anshakus Epiphanes. Since he could not command the respect due to his high office, he ended his life by taking poison. Campaign in Idumea. When Gorgias became governor of the region, he employed foreign troops and used every opportunity to attack the Jews. At the same time, the Idumeans, who held some important strongholds, were harassing the Jews. They welcomed fugitives from Jerusalem and endeavored to continue the war. Maccabees and his companions, after public prayers asking Elohim to be their ally, moved quickly against the strongholds of the Idumeans. Attacking vigorously, they gained control of the places, drove back all the men to the walls, and cut down those who opposed them, killing as many as 20,000 men. When at least 9,000 took refuge in 2 very strong towers, containing everything necessary to sustain a siege, Maccabees left Simon and Joseph, along with Zacchaeus and his men, in sufficient numbers to besiege them, while he himself went off to places where he was more urgently needed. But some of the men in Simon's force who were money lovers let themselves be bribed by some of the men in the towers. On receiving 70,000 drachmas, they allowed a number of them to escape. When Maccabees was told what had happened, he assembled the rulers of the people and accused those men of having sold their kinsmen for money by setting their enemies free to fight against them. So he put them to death as traitors, and without delay captured the two towers. As he was successful at arms in all his undertakings, he destroyed more than 20,000 men in the two strongholds. Judas defeats Timothy. Timothy, who had previously been defeated by the Jews, gathered a tremendous force of foreign troops and collected a large number of cavalry from Asia, then he appeared in Judea, ready to conquer it by force. At his approach, Maccabeus and his men made supplication to Elohim, sprinkling earth upon their heads and girding their loins in sackcloth. Lying prostrate at the foot of the altar, they begged him to be gracious to them, and to be an enemy to their enemies, and a foe to their foes, as the Torah declares. After the prayer, they took up their arms and advanced a considerable distance from the city, halting when they were close to the enemy. As soon as dawn broke, the armies joined battle, the one having as pledge of success and victory not only their valor but also their reliance on Yahweh, and the other taking fury as their leader in the fight. In the midst of the fierce battle, there appeared to the enemy from the heavens five majestic men riding on golden bridled horses, who led the Jews on. They surrounded Maccabeus, and shielding him with their own armor, kept him from being wounded. They shot arrows and hurled thunderbolts at the enemy, who were bewildered and blinded, thrown into confusion and routed. 2,500 of their foot soldiers and 600 of their horsemen were slain. Timothy, however, fled to a well-fortified stronghold called Gazara, where Chaereas was in command. For 4 days Maccabeus and his men eagerly besieged the fortress. Those inside, relying on the strength of the place, kept repeating outrageous blasphemies and uttering abominable words. When the fifth day dawned, 20 young men in the army of Maccabeus, angered over such blasphemies, bravely stormed the wall and with savage fury cut down everyone they encountered. Others who climbed up the same way swung around on the defenders, taking the besieged in the rear, they put the towers to the torch, spread the fire and burned the blasphemers alive. Still others broke down the gates and let in the rest of the troops, who took possession of the city. Timothy had hidden in a cistern, but they killed him, along with his brother Chaereas, and Apollophans. On completing these exploits, they blessed, with hymns of grateful praise, Yahweh who shows great kindness to Israel and grants them victory. 2 Maccabees 11, 1-38 Nabba. Lysias besieges Bethzur. Very soon afterward, Lysias, guardian and kinsman of the king and head of the government, being greatly displeased at what had happened, mustered about 80,000 infantry and all his cavalry and marched against the Jews. His plan was to make Jerusalem a Greek settlement, to levy tribute on the temple, as he did on the sanctuaries of the other nations, and to put the high priesthood up for sale every year. He did not take Elohim's power into account at all, but felt exultant confidence in his myriads of foot soldiers, his thousands of horsemen, and his 80 elephants. So he invaded Judea, and when he reached Bethzur, a fortified place about 20 miles from Jerusalem, launched a strong attack against it. When Maccabeus and his men learned that Lysias was besieging the strongholds, they and all the people begged Yahweh with lamentations and tears to send a good angel to save Israel. Maccabeus himself was the first to take up arms, and he exhorted the others to join him in risking their lives to help their kinsmen. Then they resolutely set out together. Suddenly, while they were still near Jerusalem, a horseman appeared at their head, clothed in white garments and brandishing gold weapons. Then all of them together thanked Elohim for his mercy, and their hearts were filled with such courage that they were ready to assault not only men but the most savage beasts, yes, even walls of iron. Now that Yahweh had shown his mercy toward them, they advanced in battle order with the aid of their heavenly ally. Hurling themselves upon the enemy like lions, they laid low 11,000 foot soldiers and 1,600 horsemen, and put all the rest to flight. Most of those who got away were wounded and stripped of their arms, while Lysias himself escaped only by shameful flight. Lysias makes peace with the Jews. But Lysias was not a stupid man. He reflected on the defeat he had suffered, and came to realize that the Hebrews were invincible because the mighty Elohim was their ally. He therefore sent a message persuading them to settle everything on just terms, and promising to persuade the king also, and to induce him to become their friend. Maccabeus, solicitous for the common good, agreed to all that Lysias proposed, and the king, on his part, granted in behalf of the Jews all the written requests of Maccabeus to Lysias. These are the terms of the letter which Lysias wrote to the Jews. Lysias sends greetings to the Jewish people. John and Absalom, your envoys, have presented your signed communication and asked about the matters contained in it. Whatever had to be referred to the king I call to his attention, and the things that were acceptable he has granted. If you maintain your loyalty to the government, I will endeavor to further your interests in the future. On the details of these matters I have authorized my representatives, as well as your envoys, to confer with you. Farewell. The year 148, the 24th of Dioscorinthius. The king's letter read thus, King Antiochus sends greetings to his brother Lysias. Now that our father has taken his place among the gods, we wish the subjects of our kingdom to be undisturbed in conducting their own affairs. We understand that the Jews do not agree with our father's policy concerning Greek customs but prefer their own way of life. They are petitioning us to let them retain their own customs. Since we desire that this people too should be undisturbed, our decision is that their temple be restored to them and that they live in keeping with the customs of their ancestors. Accordingly, please send them messengers to give them our assurances of friendship, so that, when they learn of our decision, they may have nothing to worry about but may contentedly go about their own business. The king's letter to the people was as follows, King Antiochus sends greetings to the Jewish Senate and to the rest of the Jews. If you are well, it is what we desire. We too are in good health. Menelaus has told us of your wish to return home and attend to your own affairs. Therefore, those who return by the 30th of Xanthicus will have our assurance of full permission to observe their dietary Torah and other Torah, just as before, and none of the Jews shall be molested in any way for faults committed through ignorance. I have also sent Menelaus to reassure you. Farewell. In the year 148, the 15th of Xanthicus. The Romans also sent them a letter as follows, Quintus Memmius and Titus Manius, legates of the Romans, send greetings to the Jewish people. Whatever Lysias, kinsman of the king, has granted you, we also approve. But the matters in which it passed judgment should be submitted to the king. As soon as you have considered them, send someone to us with your decisions so that we may present them to your advantage, for we are on our way to Antioch. Make haste, then, to send us those who can inform us of your intentions. Farewell. In the year 148, the 15th of Xanthicus. 2 Maccabees 12, 1-46 Naba. Incidents at Joppa and Jamia. After these agreements were made, Lysias returned to the king, and the Jews went about their farming. But some of the local governors, Timothy and Apollonius, son of Genius, as also Hieronymus and Demophon, to say nothing of Nicanor, the commander of the Cyprians, would not allow them to live in peace. Some people of Joppa also committed this outrage. They invited the Jews who lived among them, together with their wives and children, to embark on boats which they had provided. There was no hint of enmity toward them, this was done by public vote of the city. When the Jews, not suspecting treachery and wishing to live in friendly terms, accepted the invitation, the people of Joppa took them out to sea and drowned at least 200 of them. As soon as Judas heard of the barbarous deed perpetrated against his countrymen, he summoned his men, and after calling upon Elohim, the just deliverer, he marched against the murderers of his kinsmen. In a night attack he set the harbor on fire, burnt the boats, and put to the sword those who had taken refuge there. When the gates of the town were shut, he withdrew, intending to come back later and wipe out the entire population of Joppa. On hearing that the men of Jamia planned to give like treatment to the Jews who lived among them, he attacked the Jamian populace by night, setting fire to the harbor and the fleet, so that the glow of the flames was visible as far as Jerusalem, 30 miles away. The campaign in Gilead. When the Jews had gone about a mile from there in the campaign against Timothy, they were attacked by Arabs numbering at least 5,000 foot soldiers, and 500 horsemen. After a hard fight, Judas and his companions, with Elohim's help, were victorious. The defeated nomads begged Judas to make friends with them and promised to supply the Jews with cattle and to help them in every other way. Realizing that they could indeed be useful in many respects, Judas agreed to make peace with them. After the pledge of friendship had been exchanged, the Arabs withdrew to their tents. He also attacked a certain city called Casbin, fortified with earthworks and ramparts and inhabited by a mixed population of Gentiles. Relying on the strength of their walls and their supply of provisions, the besieged treated Judas and his men with contempt, insulting them and even uttering blasphemies and profanity. But Judas and his men invoked the aid of the great sovereign of the world, who, in the day of Joshua, overthrew Jericho without battering ram or siege machine, then they furiously stormed the ramparts. Capturing the city by the will of Elohim, they inflicted such indescribable slaughter on it that the adjacent pool, which was about a quarter of a mile wide, seemed to be filled with the blood that flowed into it. Judas defeats Timothy's army. When they had gone on some 90 miles, they reached Charax, where there were certain Jews known as Tubiani. But they did not find Timothy in that region, for he had already departed from there without having done anything except to leave behind in one place a very strong garrison. But Josephus and Sosipater, two of Maccabeus' captains, marched out and destroyed the force of more than 10,000 men that Timothy had left in the stronghold. Meanwhile, Maccabeus divided his army into cohorts, with a commander over each cohort, and went in pursuit of Timothy, who had a force of 120,000 foot soldiers and 2,500 horsemen. When Timothy learned of the approach of Judas, he sent ahead of him the women and children, as well as the baggage, to a place called Carnion, which was hard to besiege and even hard to reach because of the difficult terrain of that region. But when Judas' first cohort appeared, the enemy was overwhelmed with fear and terror at the manifestation of the All-Seeing. Scattering in every direction, they rushed away in such headlong flight that in many cases they wounded one another, pierced by the swords of their own men. Judas pressed the pursuit vigorously, putting the sinners to the sword and destroying as many as 30,000 men. Timothy himself fell into the hands of the men under Josephus and Sosipater, but with great cunning, he asked them to spare his life and let him go, because he had in his power the parents and relatives of many of them, and could make these suffer. When he had fully confirmed his solemn pledge to restore them unharmed, they let him go for the sake of saving their brethren. Judas wins other victories. Judas then marched to Carnion and the shrine of that Argatus, where he killed 25,000 people. After the defeat and destruction of these, he moved his army to Ephron, a fortified city inhabited by people of many nationalities. Robust young men took up their posts in defense of the walls, from which they fought valiantly. Inside were large supplies of machines and missiles. But the Jews, invoking the sovereign who forcibly shatters the might of his enemies, got possession of the city and slaughtered 25,000 of the people in it. Then they set out from there and hastened unto Scythopolis, 75 miles from Jerusalem. But when the Jews who lived there testified to the goodwill shown by the Scythopolitans and to their kind treatment even in times of adversity, Judas and his men thanked them and exhorted them to be well disposed to their race in the future also. Finally they arrived in Jerusalem, shortly before the Feast of Weeks. Judas defeats Gorgias. After this feast called Pentecost, they lost no time in marching against Gorgias, governor of Idumea, who opposed them with 3,000 foot soldiers and 400 horsemen. In the ensuing battle, a few of the Jews were slain. A man called Josephus, a powerful horseman and one of Bashaner's men, caught hold of Gorgias, grasped his military cloak and dragged him along by main strength, intending to capture the vile wretch alive, when a Thracian horseman attacked Josephus and cut off his arm at the shoulder. Then Gorgias fled to Marissa. After Stris and his men had been fighting for a long time and were weary, Judas called upon Yahweh to show himself their ally and leader in the battle. Then, raising a battle cry in his ancestral language, and with songs, he charged Gorgias' men when they were not expecting it and put them to flight. Prayers for those killed in battle. Judas rallied his army and went to the city of Adullam. As the week was ending, they purified themselves according to custom and kept the Sabbath there. On the following day, since the task had now become urgent, Judas and his men went to gather up the bodies of the slain and bury them with their kinsmen in their ancestral tombs. But under the tunic of each of the dead they found amulets sacred to the idols of Jamia, which the Torah forbids the Jews to wear. So it was clear to all that this was why these men had been slain. They all therefore praised the ways of Yahweh, the just deliverer who brings to light the things that are hidden. Turning to supplication, they prayed that the sinful deed might be fully blotted out. The noble Judas warned the soldiers to keep themselves free from sin, for they had seen with their own eyes what had happened because of the sin of those who had fallen. He then took up a collection among all his soldiers, amounting to 2,000 silver drachmas, which he sent to Jerusalem to provide for an expiatory sacrifice. In doing this he acted in a very excellent and noble way, inasmuch as he had the resurrection of the dead in view, for if they were not expecting the fallen to rise again, it would have been useless and foolish to pray for them in death. But if he did this with a view to the splendid reward that awaits those who had gone to rest in godliness, it was a set-apart holy and pious thought. Thus he made atonement for the dead that they might be freed from this sin. End of today's scriptures. Praise Yah! In the public domain. New Moon, Numbers 28, 1-15.
Daily Offerings.
Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel, and tell them, My offering, my food for my offerings made by fire, of a pleasant aroma to me, you shall observe to offer to me in their due season. You shall tell them, This is the offering made by fire which you shall offer to Yahweh, male lambs a year old without blemish, 2 days by day, for a continual burnt offering. You shall offer the one lamb in the morning, and you shall offer the other lamb at evening, with the tenth part of an ephah of fine flour for a meal offering, mixed with the fourth part of a hin of beaten oil. It is a continual burnt offering, which was ordained in Mount Sinai for a pleasant aroma, an offering made by fire to Yahweh. Its drink offering shall be the fourth part of a hin for the one lamb. You shall pour out a drink offering of strong drink to Yahweh in the set-apart holy place. The other lamb you shall offer at evening, as the meal offering of the morning, and as the drink offering of it, you shall offer it, an offering made by fire, of a pleasant aroma to Yahweh.
Sabbath offerings.
On the Sabbath day, 2 male lambs, a year old without blemish, and 2/10 parts of an ephah of fine flour for a meal offering, mixed with oil, and the drink offering of it. This is the burnt offering of every Sabbath, besides the continual burnt offering, and the drink offering of it.
Monthly offerings.
In the beginnings of your months you shall offer a burnt offering to Yahweh, 2 young bulls, and 1 ram, 7 male lambs, a year old without blemish, and 3/10 parts of an ephah of fine flour for a meal offering, mixed with oil, for each bull, and 2/10 parts of fine flour for a meal offering, mixed with oil, for the 1 ram, and the 10th part of fine flour mixed with oil for a meal offering to every lamb, for a burnt offering of a pleasant aroma, an offering made by fire to Yahweh. Their drink offerings shall be 1/2 hin of wine for a bull, and the 1/3 part of a hin for the ram, and the 1/4 part of a hin for a lamb. This is the burnt offering of every month throughout the months of the year. 1 male goat for a sin offering to Yahweh, it shall be offered besides the continual burnt offering, and the drink offering of it. End of today's related scriptures. Praise Yah. HNV version, in the public domain.